are the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, let's just say the 6 o'clock news will never be the same again. The days of Walter Cronkite and three network channels has long passed. Well, journalism has morphed into news, opinion, and ideological rants, all passed off as unbiased, honest news. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. So your search continues for the Out Loud truth. I get it. Well, here it won't be just the news. It'll be how we discuss the news. A drive time show you can count on weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We call it Nozzle. World news, political talk, stories that impact your health. Honor our heroes, stories that'll inspire you. What you'll hear next is the heartbeat of the people. The hottest topics, the news stories that trend. It's time, friends, for a new stream of consciousness. It's Nozzle. You know, I have to tell you, for years and years, we often thought, what if we could get somebody a little more unusual, somebody who tackled problems just a little bit differently than the normal politician? I mean, listen, I talked about this for years. I talked about it in corporate boardrooms. I talked about it when I came to the radio mic. And we always see that because I think, as most of you out there, most Americans, we've gotten tired of it. We've all gotten a little cynical here on the whole thing, haven't we now, you know? When you see an event happen sometimes in your life, and we talk about history a lot, friends, and what really makes history? You know, I think back to some of the momentous times when Ronald Reagan was here on the planet, and boy, you just knew those were really fascinating moments with the Berlin Wall, what he was doing with Mikhail Gorbachev. You know, as I said to you many times, he changed the world. Those players, you know, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, Mikhail Gorbachev, I even throw Pope John Paul in that circle many times. But it was an interesting mix of leadership, and it legitimately changed the world for the better, clearly. You know, made a lot of lives better. And you have to think that's got to be the goal of most politicians, you hope. Yeah, I mean, this is why we elect them to high office. Now when you see what's happening with North Korea and you see the developments here over the past few days, you know, listen, many of you may or may not read or watch a lot of these publications or broadcasts, but, you know, at some point you begin to question all of this, and there's a lot of talk about legitimizing. Why would the president legitimize Kim Jong-un, and why would he legitimize the North Korean regime? So why would that be? Now, friends, these are the same people who, you know, they sit and criticize as Monday morning quarterbacks consistently. Now, imagine the opposing outcome of what had happened here. All right, so let's look at this a moment. Let's say none of this happened, and instead, North Korea got more provocative, and they got a little more daring. And actually, one of those missiles landed in Japan. Or maybe they struck a United States property somewhere. I don't know. But what if? I mean, we really didn't even know all of the pieces to this capabilities of North Korea. They've got so much hidden over there, and we really weren't sure of every piece. But what if that had happened? Would these same critics come out and say, damn that Trump? Why didn't he do so? Why didn't he offer to sit down with this man? Why? Would that have been the call, I wonder, that you might have heard? Is that possible, I wonder? Would these same critics and Monday morning quarterbacks be damning the president for not doing anything, like previous presidents, potentially? And so this man, this unusual politician, this businessman turned politician, really, not really a politician, he decides to take it a different way. But isn't that what this man is all about? And isn't this what we elected to this office, people? Isn't this what it's all about? Sure it is. You know, I want to read you here something from the AP, from The Wire, and from Yahoo here. And the headline is this: Backslapping Trump Summit Legitimizes Kim, Say Critics. Of course, we're all fascinated with what the critics say, aren't we now? And it goes on to say this: and analysts noted that Trump was treated as an equal, a man who only a few months ago seemed to be tipping the world towards nuclear war and whose regime had been accused of horrendous human rights abuses. That's another thing I want to talk about later with you, this human rights abuses business, you know? Okay. Back to the Yahoo article. The optics of this summit, from the handshakes to the flag arrangements, which drove people crazy, by the way, people, you know? Oh, they got our flag near the North Korean flag. What's the matter with these people, you know? To the seating arrangements are indistinguishable from a meeting between two sovereign states with normal diplomatic relations. And it goes on and on anyways. It was not necessarily an unbearable cost, he tweeted, but the legitimizing effect on North Korea's regime is undeniable. So, when you get into this more, they talk about the luxurious surrounds of the hotel in Singapore, of course, and Trump, showing him the armored car and what a fool he is, and that he would shower this young man with compliments, that he would say he's talented. God forbid he would say anything nice about this man. He's an evil, you know, empire, and he's doing this and that. So we want to, you know, it's like, if you really want to get somebody to the bargaining table of life and you're really going to talk about world peace, you do that eye to eye, you sit to civilized people, you have a real conversation, people. What's the alternative? To get in the room and punch each other out and call each other names to our faces? Is that the alternative? Or do we just let these people just keep going on unchecked in history? It just rattles the mind, I have to tell you. It really rattles the mind. Well, it is Malcolm Out Loud here, friends, and today on coverage on North Korea, we bring to the show here, Colonel Jim Warsuk is here and Dennis Santiago. And so, gentlemen, I want to talk about first legitimizing. Specifically, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the critics because, quite frankly, they drive me crazy, you know. I mean, they really do, and I can only deal with them in small doses, so much that I watch very little of them these days, and I turn a lot of it off because I find it a nuisance. I think as most Americans would agree with what I say, and that's why the ratings are dropping on a lot of these broadcasts and publications, is why they're in financial trouble and ruins. I suspect the Fourth Estate in America is in a lot of trouble, quite frankly. So this whole legitimizing, Colonel Warsuk, what would have been, I mean, you see my point here about you can never really please the critics. It's really, I mean, I don't think they're pleasable, quite frankly. I don't really, well, listen, do we know what they really want? I don't think they want success. And I don't think they really want the country to be successful. So I really don't know what they want exactly. Have you been able to figure it out?
Well, I think we have to look back and take this several ways. And the first point is, as you mentioned earlier about Ronald Reagan, how would this have been treated during Reagan's time? Or is this somewhat of an example of what Reagan would have done? But you have to look at both the world, of course, that was during the Cold War, and the world now, which is probably worse off with regard to relations amongst various groups around the world. It was pretty black and white back then, where it was the free world and the communist Soviet Union and their satellites. And even Democrats and Republicans, you know, we can go back to Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, who could have a beer at the end of the day and sit down and talk. We are in such a polarized world now, and it's not just Republican and Democratic politics. It's international politics. And that condemnation and the things that we're hearing is all part of that, and it's actually being driven by the left, where you have anything that Donald Trump says, does, is alluded to something him is automatically it's automatic. It has to be presented negatively. He will never be able to conduct, whether it's negotiations like this or anything, without having a negative spin put on it, and that's because of the polarization. And here's why Trump is able to get around all that, and we've talked about this. I've written about it and talked about it before. We go back to what I, you know, refer to as the Trump doctrine, and it's getting a lot more play now. In fact, it's getting a lot of play now with regard to this. Trump approaches everything from a realistic standpoint. He approaches everything from a businessman standpoint or a business standpoint, and he looks at who are the people that this really matters to, and he sees North Korea and us. He's not worried about other people's opinions. He's not worried about world opinion. He's not worried about this group's opinion. And he does this all the time.
Right.
In everything he does, he's not having to worry about, well, if I say this, it's going to upset this group, or I say it's going to upset. He looks at what are the interests at play here. And he realizes, and I really believe he intimidated Kim Jong-un. I really believe that Kim Jong-un really is mystified by Donald Trump. He sees this American who is bigger than life in stature, and he's almost like the 5 or 6 year old kid who looks up to a famous athlete and admires him. I really think Un admires him, and you know, Trump knew that, and I believe his advisors.
Yeah.
He put together a really good negotiating team. He had some really smart people on there, and I wrote about their backgrounds the other day, and they advised him a lot on about Kim.
The psychology,
and all this whole agreement was all done. Yesterday just was the stage show.
Exactly.
Everything was written.
Exactly.
Everything was orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
The documents were ready to be signed. That was all agreed upon in the background. That was taken care of. Trump would have never met with him if this wasn't going to play out this way.
Which I guess made it maybe come off a little smoother than they anticipated, maybe, Colonel, you think?
Absolutely.
No, I hear what you're saying. Dennis, earlier today I was thinking about you in a lot of the write-ins and the commentary you've been providing on North Korea over the years. And as a kind of a student of the game here and what's being played out of this, and I was thinking, I'm sure you'll have an interesting perspective on this. Because, you know Trump is an interesting man for interesting moments of times, as the Colonel was just saying. There's nothing normal about it. But then again, normal hasn't worked up to this point, has it? You've talked about this in many ways in your write-ins over the years. What do you think is different about this time right now, Dennis?
I'll go back to the Reagan era, which is where Jim started with. I was on the phone to Air Force One when it was parked at Reykjavik. I had a conversation that resulted at the end of it with, yes, we'll sign it. The guy that made that statement was Edward Shevardnadze. The next morning, the world changed. I know what this looks like from the inside. When I write the stuff that I write, I'm writing a playbook that I've already lived. And here's what I see going on. We'll go back to your media question. We'll go back to the pundits question, because that's an important one to play out. They had no idea what was going on inside the room. That's the bottom line. The security and the tightness of what these negotiations did, what they were getting ready to do, just like it was when I remember it from the 1980s, it was tight. These two countries negotiated bilaterally with each other. Everything you saw on the news surrounding this is no different than red carpet coverage at an Oscars. They have no idea what's going on. The pundits, here's what I have to say to all those guys. You know what? You can all have the hubris of saying I could have made a better deal, that I knew more, that we had history. And you know what? All of that adds up to, no, we're not going to go talk. And the bottom line is, this guy figured out how to get this man on the other side of the world to negotiate. You know what that takes between you and me? Trump's heart. That's the bottom line. He cared about what happened to these people. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done it that way.
Wow.
Ronald Reagan cared the same way. I felt it. That's why I wrote all the stuff that I wrote for the last year about this. I mean, I started off with an article that questioned whether or not North Korea should be a country at all, and basically worked my way to arguing that we should have this summit. It opens a door. All of the pundits, everything that they say would not have opened that door. It would have kept it closed.
Right. Right. Well, you know, Dennis, you are an out-of-the-box thinker, which is really what I truly think you bring to the game here. And it really is. So you look at things, and you can tell by your write-ins, you look at things a little bit differently. And that's what is really cool about all of this right now and what is happening on the world stage. It's a little different. Now, a lot of these cats don't know how to take it. They really don't know because this is out of their wheelhouse. It's like, well, why is he doing that? Well, that's not supposed to be done that way. Well, this guy's unorthodox. Man, he's very unpresidential. I mean, see, these are all the catchphrases they use in media land because it doesn't fit their narrative, their agenda, whatever it is that they want. You know, I just have to hope and pray, folks, as we start here on the program here today, I have to really, truly hope and pray. And I do believe that Americans, when they hear this stuff, that our fellow Americans, that they really understand garbage when they hear or see garbage. I pray that they understand that and they can read through all of this garbage. And, you know, and again, as you see ratings continue to drop and people are wondering why they're not turning to these shows and what's happening, well, I think people are onto their game. It gets old after a little while, friends, is all I'm saying. I mean, you can put up with that stuff for a little bit and it's entertaining for a few minutes of the day, potentially. But then after a while, your common sense kicks in and it gets just a little bit out of the realm of possibilities here. That's all I'm saying. Let's do this. Before we get into the second chapter of this production here today on Nozzle Friends, let's just do really brief, quick introductions here. Dennis, take just a few seconds to tell folks your background real quick, please.
I'm Dennis Santiago. I am a global stability and financial analyst. I have a background in, as you've heard, strategic warfare and strategic nuclear policy. I have since moved on because of the end of the Cold War to work in the world of banking and finance, and that's where I am now. But I keep getting called back into this wonderful world of trying to find ways to make the world better. And
yeah, it's a good way to
thoroughly
say it.
Enjoy it.
That's a good way to say it. Trying to find ways to make the world better. That is a good way to put it, Dennis. It really is, because and you present that as a patriot. You always come across with that, and I think that's what we're all trying to do here, Colonel. Colonel Jim Warshak, yeah, take please a few moments and tell folks your background, please.
Career senior intelligence officer, worked across the U.S. government with various agencies as a strategic and special mission intelligence officer, worked on the White House National Security Council staff, and have been involved in numerous conflicts from a standpoint of actually kicking in doors, so to speak, to negotiating agreements with foreign governments to work with us as allies in the global war on terrorism. And, you know, this is a continued effort of that since I've retired, and such as Dennis and Malcolm said, to try to make the world a better place as well for all of us.
That's it. Really, really well said, buddy. Yeah. Well, listen, friends, that's really, I just want to mention, that's the level of expertise really we have on this platform, are just absolutely amazing people and really patriots, people who passionately care. And I can say collectively, the people I know and the people I'm hanging with all want to make the world a better place. You can't lose with that kind of an outcome, friends, when that's the vision of what you really want to accomplish here. Stay right there. The big show here, and excited to have Colonel Jim Warshak and Dennis Santiago. More Nozzle in just a moment. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So one of the most interesting pieces I've seen coming out of this summit, and gentlemen, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, was a very, very fascinating video that was put out by the White House. And I want to tell listeners about it right now. And it's a piece that the president had put together. And I think they called it Destiny Productions, coincidentally, which you have to love that name. Now, remember now, this is an unusual man that's president now. He's going to do things a little differently. The video, I assure you, and you have to see this, friends. I think it's about 4 minutes in its entirety, unless you want to watch the press conference after it. And I'm gonna tell you how to find this and how to see this, but you really need to take the 4 minutes and see it. It's a very interesting approach. This is the video that he played for Kim Jong-un in North Korea in private. They played this particular video. And it's funny because as I started to hear some of the president speaking, he was talking about the real estate on the North Korean beaches. And I was wondering, what is he talking about? And he goes on to say, he says, well, you know, you have China on one side, he says, you got South Korea on the other, and there they are, right smack in the middle of it. Meaning, you know, there's North Korea right smack in the middle. How bad can that be, he says. And of course, he's talking about from a real estate investment tycoon sort of thing, like, are you kidding me? There's an opportunity here. You got all these millions of people right here. And you got this, and it's funny because he started to talk about the beaches there. And he said, man, have you seen these beaches? They're beautiful, he said. You can't imagine. You couldn't imagine this being said by a president. How unusual is this? It's wildly unusual. He said, normally, he said, I see these beaches in the videos, and they got rockets they're shooting off and this and that. And I'm thinking to myself, Trump says, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, people, but you get it. He says, and I'm thinking, oh, look at that real estate. Look at those beaches. I'm seeing condos. I'm seeing hotels. I'm seeing commerce. You gotta love this stuff. And I'm thinking, wow. Well, the president goes on and he says, let me tell you, I jotted a couple of quick notes down that he said from that video I want to share with you. Very inspiring. He said, real change is indeed possible. We're prepared to start a new history, and we're ready to write a new chapter between our countries. The past does not have to define the future. Yesterday's conflict does not have to be tomorrow's war. And as history has proven over and over again, adversaries can become friends. Now, I got to tell you what, those words resonated with me, guys. I mean, they really spoke to me. He went on to say, peace is worth the effort. So for all these people that are out there being critics right now and quarterbacks on, you know, what a waste and what did this accomplish, and he legitimized North Korea and all this rubbish trash talk that I'm sure is upsetting you listeners as it is me, okay? So he goes on to say, oh, yes, peace is worth the effort. I mean, what is the alternative? Killing millions of people? I mean, come on, people, get a life, somebody, please. He says, then, anyone can make war. Listen to this statement here, this next statement. Anyone can make war. But only the courageous can make peace. God, I just love that statement, Colonel. That just excites the hell out of me. He wraps it up then. He says, I'll do whatever it takes to make the world a safer place. Now, these are the president's words. And for all these people who sit and bitch and complain and gripe and hem and whore, it irritates the hell out of me. When the man says right here, I'll do whatever it takes to make the world a safer place, what more do you need to hear? This is the same man that was going to blow the world up, remember? That was going to use weapons and blow everybody up. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Colonel, what are we missing in all of this? I mean, listen to the words I put out there. I mean, these are the words of the president in the last 24 hours. And the video is absolutely amazing. And I want to tell everybody, if you go to America Out Loud, when you're done with the show, listen to the whole show first, of course. Then go there, and you'll see a column in there, and the video is right there. And it's entitled, Peace is Worth the Effort. What if? What if? And the president talks about that in that video. He talks about what if. So, Colonel, what do you think about that? And talk to me about the president framing this in the video that the White House put out, which he showed Kim Jong-un. I mean, highly, highly unusual, is it not?
Well, this is the way Donald Trump presents that. And he is very direct and very deliberate in all of the ways he approaches things compared to, as I said earlier, the way we have done things in the past diplomatically. He has I guess I could describe it as a more direct approach, a more direct route. But he's a showman, and he wants to ensure when he does something, people know about it. You know, part of it's in his nature and his character on everything. His Twitter feed, how he describes things. He makes sure he has people's attention. He is very much the consummate entertainer from this. I don't mean this derogatorily or from a standpoint of you know, comedy or anything, but he wants the world to understand and see how he does things and how he approaches it. And I think what he's trying to demonstrate is, I'm very thorough. I'm very analytical. You may not see that up front. What you see is the reality aspect, what is going to make the headlines, and you're not necessarily going to see the details. And I think that is part and parcel to this agreement. We don't know all the details. We're starting to see some of it, that this has been going on for some time now. But all we see is, you know, perhaps the distracting shiny object. If you go back to his original presidential campaign, where he talked about this, and then in the early months of his campaign, as North Korea, you know, was testing him, because it was really testing him, where Kim Jong-un was trying to, you know, do his missile tests, and this was pretty controversial in the early months of the campaign. And we had him, what was he doing? He was calling him Rocket Man and all kinds of other things. Right. And that was really the distraction. That was to force the media and his detractors to go run towards that while he was doing other things. And I think now people are starting to realize this, that yes, this is how he does things.
You know, people think when he's doing that kind of stuff, Jim, people think he's crazy, obviously, because it is so highly unusual. Interestingly enough, it wasn't a surprise to me, but there's been a lot of criticizing Colonel, that he pledged to end the military exercises in South Korea, these ones that were coming up here in a few months. And he talked about putting them on hold while we work through all the details. Now, I simply don't have a problem with that, and think that, I mean, that's not really a big concession by any means. I mean, why continue to rub salt in their face and, you know, be juvenile about it if we're really trying to have world peace here? But again, a lot of the Monday morning quarterbacks and critics here find fault with that somehow, which, again, I don't want to focus on them, but it just makes you sick. And they go on, and, you know, one of the other reference points I heard, by the way, was when President Clinton, when he sent Madeleine Albright, remember, there to deal with them, remember, some years ago, to Kim Jong-il, and the word was that they were saying, these were some of the Democrat strategists were saying, well, Clinton had a chance to do this, but he declined the invitation from Kim Jong-il and sent his, you know, Secretary of State. And, you know, why did Trump have to legitimize this leader by agreeing to meet with him, not really understanding what the stakes are? And, of course, the stakes have gotten more and more serious here as things have gone on. Do you disagree with that, or do you think this was the right move for the president to pause those while the rest of the program is worked out?
I don't see it as a big deal, and I don't see it as absolutely necessary. I mean, we hold a series of exercises on an annual basis with the South Koreans and with the Japanese, and to not hold an exercise is not necessarily a big deal. You know, there's nothing that says a military exercise or training program has to be regimented to be conducted when and where it was on the books to be. I mean, we've canceled exercises over the years for many other reasons with other countries, and we've rescheduled them or we've canceled them. I don't see it as a strategic shortfall to not have them,
right.
And they're exercises. They're designed to be used for numerous things. They're not necessarily always a show of force. And if you're looking at it from a standpoint of a show of force, mm-hmm. you know, we can do exercises with our allies in other ways. You know, what we do, we have what are called CPXs. They're essentially tabletop exercises where it's really designed to do two things. You can test the troops in their actual capabilities physically on the ground, at sea, in the air. But the general officers do this all the time, where they do command post exercises, CPXs, and they can test their command and control capabilities and responsibilities without utilizing actual military forces. So, I mean, there's lots of opportunities and ways around this.
I mean, I think he made the right decision, Jim. Why do anything? Why?
Well, of course.
Why should we be more provocative at this point? And, you know, I just don't understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't get it, what the theory is.
It's a way to show North Korea that we're genuine, we're real, and we're going to, if this was probably something that was talked about in the negotiations prior to yesterday,
right.
that said, okay, one of the things we'll do in exchange for something,
yeah.
we'll cancel our exercises.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and it's not a lot to give up.
No, of course not. You know, gentlemen, I have to tell you, I think a lot of people don't want world peace, I have to tell you, really and truly. Dennis, I don't think a lot of people want world peace, really, honestly.
Well, they make a living off of it.
They make a living off of it. Thank you, buddy. That's number one. And number two, Dennis, they certainly don't want world peace on Donald Trump's watch.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a perspective on that one. Korea, in the aftermath of this agreement, the entire strategic planning process for the United States, from the point of view of everything from national security decision directives all the way down to mission element need assessments, and I am using technical terms on this one, changes. It pivots. Why do you need in the future, if North Korea behaves, and remember very carefully and listen to the wording. What they said was, we will hold off on exercises as long as North Korea continues to abide by the principles of what we have discussed.
Mm-hmm.
That is a stick right. with a carrot.
That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
If this goes mm-hmm. that direction and Korea behaves and that entire part of the world's tension goes down from a global stability perspective, what does that mean? It means you're going to be rewriting NSDDs, you're going to be rewriting MENAs, you're going to be pivoting where you deploy U.S. forces. And you know what? Between you and me, right now, if you had to plan exercises on the Pacific Rim, I would be planning military exercises in the South China Sea, not in the Sea of Japan, okay? I mean, bottom line, I've been there. Jim's been there. We know what these discussions go back and forth. All these things are on the table at any given time, and the matrix is ever changing. It becomes particularly ever changing when you have leadership, which is something that the White House has, and everybody else is trying to preserve their rice bowls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's be plain about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that leadership is basically saying we can pivot and change where the United States and the rest of the world invests in military exercises for global stability management purposes. That's what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's changing. That's what tomorrow looks like. And these people in the Beltway haven't even woken up to smell the coffee.
Well, I just don't think they get it, Dennis. I don't think they really understand what's happening. And again, it's sort of, how do I say to you, it's sort of like robotic. You see, politicians, they really are like robots. It's a very robotic program and atmosphere up there. And in other words, there's a certain way you're supposed to do things. And if you differ from that, well, you're a screwball, you're an oddball, you're a freakaloid, you're something. Now, listen, that video.
Between you and me, you're an idiot. I mean,
yeah,
you know, let me talk about that video for a second, okay?
I mean, was this unbelievable or not, Dennis? I'm telling you.
I totally get it, okay?
Totally.
I totally get it. Donald Trump is a statesman. He's a showy statesman, but he is a statesman.
It's a good way to put it.
Here is the statesmanship version of that video. This goes back to the visions of people like George Marshall at the end of World War II, rebuilding Europe Donald Trump is basically announcing first to the North Koreans, I see an opportunity to rebuild your country, and I am holding out to you the offer that if you behave and you become a member of the family of nations again, you will benefit from that. Mm-hmm. The way that translates in terms of how that plays out is he's basically in a very Atlantic City developer way saying, hey, Kim, what if you got most favored nation status for a while to redevelop your country? And those beaches did wind up with condos in them. All right. Mm-hmm. That's statement number one. There's a second message that is wrapped in what's going on here, because, you know, Trump's a statesman. He's not saying that just in one particular case. He's thinking more broadly. That exact same offer has been made, and in the way that it was presented, reiterated to this guy named Vladimir Putin, who also has the carrot in front of him of if you behave, you may get into the position of being most favored nation as well. And you know what? Trump is trying to solve things along multiple axes. Mm-hmm. Again, right. Most people don't see it. I do.
Well, the reason they don't see it.
And I think people should.
Dennis, the reason they don't see it is because, you see, what the media does is they're a one-trick pony. So what they do is, and Jim, you and I talk about this often enough, they take one story and they beat it to death. So they can only do one story at a time, you understand? And so they'll take one story, beat it to death and ad nauseum until you're so sick of it you don't want to hear any more about it, as they've done with everything. And that's all they can really do. See, Trump, on the other hand, he's playing, as you say, on multiple levels, which, of course, from the beginning, you said that, Jim, he's playing multi-level chess as everybody else is playing checkers. And so that, but these problems are profound. They have to be solved. They have their unique problems. So a couple of things here. I want to get back to in a moment here. You talk about a couple of things to discuss here. Putin, I do want to touch on him a moment in just a second. I also want to talk about image around the world. What is our image? And there's a couple of interesting points to that. Iran has also come out, and they have some, not that anybody really trusts or understands what Iran is saying, but they put their messaging out, and they tell North Korea, they warned North Korea that Trump could cancel the deal before getting home, even before the ink is dry. So don't pay attention to it. It gets more interesting as you go here, people. More Nozzle in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older. Until now, Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I think the two areas of the world that are going to definitely be impacted by this Trump doctrine, as you call it, Jim, you know, that is going to be Asia and the Middle East. I think these two areas will definitely be impacted the most. More so than Europe. Europe is old school. They've got a lot of problems there and a lot of people like Merkel who are murking it up, if you will. And, they still haven't learned their lessons there. And a lot more to talk about with Europe clearly ahead here. But anyway, so Iran releases this message about Kim Jong-un and says... they advise Kim to be careful in trusting the United States President Trump there, saying that he could cancel their denuclearization agreement with ours. Now, we all know, and I think everybody out there should know, that unless an agreement is ratified, as it becomes a binding agreement when it goes through Congress, if it doesn't do that, if the president just signs an executive order, then it's kind of a handshake deal. The next president can change it. As Trump has just proven that in the case of Obama, and that's just the way it is, people. I mean, president to president, those things can be changed. Executive orders are simply that, executive orders, that the next executive can change. When Congress ratifies something, it becomes more or less a treaty. That's a different animal. Should the president, is the next step, Colonel, to take this and to make this into a more binding treaty agreement of some sort? And will that happen here, do you think? Does the president go that way?
I think that's the direction he's going. And then, of course, it's going to take a number of more steps in this process. There'll be more meetings and negotiations. The negotiating team is still staying back there now, and they're continuing their talks. You know, that started with the bilateral after the meeting between Trump and Kim, and that whole process will go on, and it'll work towards, you know, I see several other meetings between Trump and Kim. Trump already indicated that he wants to bring him to the White House, and that's all part of the strategic influence, the PSYOP, the information operations.
I think it's a good move.
To show Kim, this is what a peaceful world looks like. Mm-hmm. It's prosperous. You can benefit. You know, I'm sure he's told him, you know what, you, of all the opulence where the hotel was, where they had this in Singapore, Kim saw all that. Mm-hmm. And he's probably just, this is where I believe Trump knows him so well, mm-hmm, that this kid is just, you know, he's come from a closed society. He knows what he knows. He sees what he sees.
Right.
And how he's enamored with everything he sees. I think he looks up to Trump as his, almost as Uncle Donald or something of that sort, where, wow, this guy is a nice guy and he's not adversarial. He can be tough when he has to be tough, but by and large, I could get along with him. And I think this is what Trump is going to do.
That's a good point, Jim, because the Asians respect that, Jim.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
As Dennis talked about, the Marshall Plan and most favored nation status, I wouldn't be surprised if those kind of discussions came about between the negotiating teams and were talked about. And one of the things that we have to remember, you know, we went to war in World War II against Germany and Japan, and we became close allies after that. There's this notion, and it's being driven by the political left, and it came after World War II from the Soviet Union, that there's got to be antagonistic animosity, hostilities all the time. And we lived through the Cold War, 50 years of the Cold War, which was exactly that. Why do we have to have an enemy? Why do we have to have this adversarial relationship? You know, we lived through post-Korean War with North Korea for the last 60 or so years. So Trump is changing that. You know, it's an executive agreement right now. I'm sure the effort will be to try to get something ratified, and that would be a good thing. But if not, what president would come in after Donald Trump and say, okay, I'm tearing this up because I want North Korea to have nuclear weapons, and just like he's done on Iran, I want Iran to have... What insane person would come on board and present that type of reverse on something like this? You know, we're supposed to be working towards peaceful solutions in the world, and Donald Trump is using his capability to do things peacefully.
The only one I could see that would do that would be the next Barack Obama, but thank God we'll never get there.
I would have said George Bush.
Yeah, probably. That would be my second choice. But anyways, I hear you guys. We're on the same page. Listen,
I'm
not
shy.
Trump, no. Trump also came out, Jim, Dennis. He said here that he would be open to striking a new nuclear accord with Tehran. However, he says the existing deal negotiated under his predecessor, Mr. Obama, as we just spoke about, had failed to address Iran's ballistic missile program. And also there was the sunset clause too, remember, people, the 10 years and all of that, which made the whole deal just really not worth it. And so that's why that deal is a problem. But you're right, Colonel, that will be coming up next with the president. I got to tell you guys, I mean, I wouldn't have predicted this, But I am really grinning from ear to ear, knowing that really the hot spots I think that we were having in the world were Asia, were North Korea, and China was getting real funny too, and the Middle East. And again, the president brilliantly met with Xi Jinping, Shinzo Abe, and with Saudi Arabia. The king there and the family was out there to visit them. I mean, these were, to me, the most strategic and brilliant moves he did in the first few months of his new administration. Now, those meetings and moves spoke to me more so. They did then and they do now. And you can see the relevancy of those right now and how he's using those relationships. See, when you're doing this kind of diplomacy, like any kind of diplomacy, whether it's politics or business, it's all done on a relationship basis. It's transactional, it's hand-to-hand, it's eye-to-eye, it's trusting and knowing people, really. Listen, there was a lot of talk, too, which, again, befuddles me, people, but about, well, he's not addressing the human rights. What's the matter with this guy? He's got to talk to him about human rights out there. You know, people, again, you just got to tune these people out and ignore them. And don't go to their television and their newspapers and don't read them and don't watch them and don't listen to them. Because it's such rubbish. Well, first of all, you can't handle every problem with every country from moment one, number one. You might as well just forget doing it if you think you're going to throw everything. It's like jumping into a hot pot. It's not going to happen. And so, yeah, there's a lot of problems in North Korea. You think we're going to fix them all on day one? But, you know, well, he needs to talk more about human rights. Well, sure. Would we do that before or after they strike a missile and hit the homeland here? Would you like us to do that before or just a little bit after that, people? Shut the hell up, will you please, and just keep going on here? These people don't know what they're talking about, clearly. I mean, let's deal with the big elephant in the room first, and then we can get to this other stuff, clearly. All right, so listen, that stuff just drives me crazy.
Just gag me with a spoon already, all right? I'm in California. I mean, human rights, right? Since the beginning of the Trump administration, do you know how many places on this planet have stopped shooting? That's human rights. There are fewer people getting shot per day on this planet since that guy was elected.
Well,
all right. Yeah. And you know, popularity, you know, you were saying popularity of Trump around the planet. There are Trump posters in Syria. There were Trump posters in Mosul when ISIS was occupying
That's
it.
Interesting.
Come on, man. That's interesting. This guy is popular because they know the rest of in the United States, we got, you know, we have a problem. We're a dysfunctional family. But you know what? Around the rest of the world, they go, hey, you know, this guy's getting fewer people killed in my backyard. I like this man. The control vector for Iran is already on the move. So the way that they're actually handling that, and you know, you don't hear about it because it's not center news, is there's discussions for yet another summit between Trump and Putin.
Well, I want to talk
specifically about Syria.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Well, it could be Syria, but I think there's a lot. The presidents were out there, which I thought was very fascinating the other day, about Putin and about Russia. And of course, they I'm sure are going wild on the left there and going crazy. Russia, he's like the big bad boogeyman. You can never talk to him. You can't bring him in. We just use him as our poster child for you know, how evil we are here in this country, and we kill each other, pull each other apart. So he's talking about a summit, potential summit with Putin and Russia. I'll tell you what I think he should do. If you really want to drive the media crazy, gentlemen, invite Putin over the same time you do with Kim Jong-un. Invite them all into the White House at the same time. You want to see the media have a heart attack and really throw them out to lunch?
You know what it is. The media is jealous, right? Because, you know, and actually, and so are the academics, because they go, what do you mean that commies like him better than us? We're the actual American commies. No, you're not. Sorry, Stalin didn't like you, little suckers.
And then they compare them. They compare him to a dictator because he can. He knows how to deal with these people. It goes on and on and on. People, it's almost funny, but it's borderline ridiculous. That's the point. I think an idea of a summit with Putin, I think it's long overdue. Jim, what do you think about that? I think it's long overdue. I mean, long overdue. I think it's going to have to happen.
I think this just sets a new precedent for how things are going to be done. They can, you know, the left and the media compare things from the past, and it's going to continue to antagonize their way of looking at things with Donald Trump, because it really comes down to the last thing they want to see is any success on his part. So, you know, I just think They're never going to admit or give him credit for anything, and they're going to do everything possible. This is a game, and it's a serious game of fighting for the hearts and minds of people, not just American people, but people everywhere. And the left realizes that despite everything they have, the media, the politicos, just those who are leftists in general and liberals who are the never Trumpers, who are all on the same sheet of music and they're all feeding off each other, and they're just frustrated as hell that this guy is beating them with a really small percentage compared to what they have. I mean, they have a multi-billion dollar media apparatus internationally that they can use, and he's beating them
at their own game
with a little bit of at their own game with the resources he has that are really minuscule compared to what they have.
Yeah, well, they do a hell of a job trying to beat it up on a daily basis. I think you're starting to see very interesting people.
You can't change truth, man.
No, you can't. You can't.
That's it.
Yeah, you know, I have a sense lately, gentlemen, that this moment of time is so historical. Everything about what we're living through these days, I'm talking about the whole period of time. I'm not talking about simply North Korea. North Korea is one piece of many things. I had a gentleman say to me on the on a call earlier today, and say, Malcolm, and we really think that Trump is here intentionally, purposefully. He's here for a reason. And we understand where this country was headed and the importance of having him here. That, in other words, they really were looking at divine intervention and really felt that there was a reason this man was here. And when you say, well, his image around the world, it is fascinating in how it is being perceived. But listen, it's less about the man. I want to say this to you all, too. It's less about the man or a man. It's more about the movement. It's more about principles. It's more about standing up for what's right and wrong. Not any one man. Any one man is just a man, people. But it really is a movement of principles. It's a movement of ideology. It's a movement of patriots who passionately care about this nation and passionately care about peace and passionately care about people everywhere. And that's what this is all about, friends. This is what this represents. It's what this platform represents, what I represent. It's what Jim and Dennis represent. It's what all of these people represent, my friends. That's what it comes down to, really and truly. Well, listen here, we got to get to predictions here. I cannot believe it's gone by. I wanted to talk to you guys about Merkel a bit and a little more opine on Putin, but Europe, what's going on, but there never is enough time. And so while you guys think about
EU can wait.
Yeah. While you guys think about, that's right, priorities, Dennis. We took the big priority today to me was the passion behind this historical moment in time. I really felt passionate about what's happened here as an American and want to speak out for all ears to hear. While you guys think about your prediction, I want to get your last word of the day here. And I just want to tell you, well, listen, while all of us have been really tied up with the North Korea business and everything going on this week, friends, I mean, a lot of people have been really tied up with what's going on with IHOP. IHOP, the pancake place, you know what I'm talking about here? Well, they threw out a campaign about you. I'm sure you've heard about it by now. You'd be living under a rock if you hadn't heard about it. And that they were going to change their name from IHOP to IHOB, adding, changing the P to a B. And, of course, it became a big mystery. They threw it out a week before. Now, I love this because I passionately ran an advertising boardroom for 27 years, people. I did this for a living, and I love these kind of campaigns. This is brilliant, actually. And so they threw it out there as a campaign, doing this big name change and all that. And of course, everybody thought the B would stand for breakfast. Well, of course, it's the International House of Breakfast. And it's because they got all this breakfast stuff. Well, they really did one in on everybody. And they changed it to the International House of Burgers. But here's the funny thing about it. They're not changing their name at all. It's only a promotion they're doing for a short period of time to bring big burgers onto the plate and to show people they have all this new menu items, which was beautiful. And they got all this free advertising, all this free publicity they couldn't have possibly paid for. Everybody has been talking about them. And it's all for just a promotion, just because for a period of time. And I think they changed the sign in Los Angeles and maybe one of the plays, but all the other signs are the same, because the name of the place really isn't changing. It just was this promotion. That, my friends, is ingenious. So while the rest of us are trying to run around the world and talk about world peace and North Korea and missiles and all this, IHOP is sitting back and they're saying, we're going to talk about burgers. Can't beat that, Dennis and Jim. I love it. You know?
I love it, too.
And
based I'm going
on,
to IHOP.
I know. You know, Dennis, based on that camp, I have to tell you truly, the other day someone said, well, I would never go. And the comments were over the top. They said, I'm not going to IHOP for a burger. But you know what? After the brilliance of that campaign and looking at the burgers, I am going to go there and have a burger just because. Just because I'm going to do it.
I'm sticking with the Tutti Frutti, baby.
And I can't tell my vegan friends that. They get upset when you talk that way. Anyways, let's get to predictions real quickly here. We got to last word on all of this here, the conversation today. Dennis Santiago, give us your prediction, please.
My prediction is that the reputation of the administration is going to hit reality. And what that is going to cause is that by November, you are going to see a migration of the black vote and Hispanic vote in the direction of Donald Trump.
Wow. Wow. That's the game changer right there, buddy. That is the game changer. You just nailed it right there. Colonel Jim Warshak, your prediction, please.
I believe the result of this summit will boost Donald Trump's approval rating by at least 10 points.
Wow.
And that will be marked probably over the next month. And it's going to set the tone for everything else with regard to the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party now is going to feel some substantial impact of this. It's going to hurt donations. They are going to get desperate and start. If you think they're crazy now, they're going to get crazier, and it's going to cost them in November.
Let me translate that to listeners here. What that all means, people, is that you're going to hear more critics and more down in all of this because it's working, clearly. Just like the economy, when Pelosi comes out and this past week, a few days ago, and says, you know, the economy sucks. What are you people all doing? We don't have enough money in our pocket, and on and on and on. I don't know what they're all on, my friends, but it is really, really wild, I'll tell you here. You know, something to think about here. Today is hashtag broadcast good. It's a nationwide campaign launched by the National Association of Broadcasters. It's showcasing the positive community impact and tireless charitable efforts that broadcasters can contribute. We're talking about not-for-profit work and things like that, friends. And today is that day. So listen, I applaud all of you media folks in radio, television, and newspaper land and journalism to get off your high horses, come out on the streets, and improve the life for everybody. Get involved in not-for-profit work and do the things you want to do. Broadcast good and tell some good stories and stop lying and spreading all that fake news around people. Big thank you today to Colonel Jim Warshak and Dennis Santiago. Always wonderful to have their perspective. And one thing is certain, my friends, there is never a shortage of news. To be continued.